Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
I'm an unpredictable kind of chick. That's what he said anyway. Do you like to be daring and adventurous, Estelle?
Oh, yes. Why not?
Yeah? Well, I mean, your cheeks are just as rosy and perky. It looks like you're a happy soul.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm happy. I try to be happy. I set the intention of being happy every day.
Okay. Well, that's good. But it looks like it's effortless. Does it take effort for you to be happy?
It is a conscious choice that I've made. My life has not always been sunshine and roses, but I've been an elder in my church, you know, and I think that I know all things is possible. All things is possible. That's part of my faith journey. And I think I choose to be happy. It is what you say.
Right. You speak it into fruition. Here on the edge. Brains, this is the place, the spot. The place where the conversation is pointed and the guests are sharp and the responses are never dull. And today we have Estelle Woods, all the way from Australia, originally transplanted from South Africa. She's a mother. She's an author. She's a friend to the show. She's a woman with a deep spiritual connection. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. She's really well helping people get through some tough times. You know, maybe you've had a child that's had some special needs or has some special attention. Maybe you need that special attention. She's also a nurse, so she can resuscitate our hearts. Welcome her to the edge. Hello, Estelle.
Oh, April, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to join you today.
I'm so excited to have you. You are just as cute. And thank you so much for your dedication. Brains, let me tell you. She likes and loves and watches the show. That's what I want you to do. I don't do this just because we're cute. We do it because it's purposeful. So go in and like it and subscribe and love on great things. And look what you'll run up on. Tell us a little bit about you, Estelle Woods.
Okay. So as you said, April, I was born in South Africa. And had a very interesting life, lost my mother growing up, which was quite traumatic. And I think the day I lost her when she was 11, when I was 11, but she died when I was 15.
Okay.
So her body kept going. And so as a mother and as a woman, my mother connection stopped there when I was 11. And I have to say here, I was thinking, being a child of Africa, I had two mothers, because I also had Angelina, my mother, that was a Khoisan lady that brought me up, that if you say the word mother, I see two faces, because they are the woman that shaped me into who I am. They taught me joy. They taught me the principles that's guided my life. So I've lost both of them, but they're always part of my soul.
I know. I just lost my mother this year too. And I tell you, like I shared with you before, I'm bent, but I'm not broken.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a journey. And you're a woman of deep faith. Did you receive that faith from your second mother?
From both my mothers. Both my mothers were women of immense faith. And taught me that to be a woman is an honor, that we are the portals for life, that all things is possible. You have to believe. And it's not always been easy. Life has thrown me many curveballs, but I have been blessed. What I was going to say to you before was when my own mother got sick when I was 11, I was watching television and they showed exchange students around the world. And I thought, that's what I was doing. That's the last memory I have of a perfect life with mum around. And then when I was in high school, I applied to be exchange student, came to Australia, got sent to Australia. I wrote anywhere in the world. And I came to Australia as an exchange student, and that changed my life. It is my home. So I feel I grew up in Africa. I have the roots there. But as an adult, as a woman, as a mother, everything that I am now, I came into being in Australia.
What was it like living in South Africa for you?
For me, so as a child, you look at life through the eyes of a child, and I thought about this very deeply before the show, and I thought, you don't know something is wrong when you're a child. You just accept. If you are a child and your mother greets you with joy, bakes your cookies, do all those beautiful things, you think that's a mother. If you are a child and you come home from school and your mother is intoxicated and she's lying there unkept with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, unconscious, you think that's normal. You do not know until you can reason that things aren't quite right. And as I grew up, I was very fortunate. My father was a businessman and honoured every person for themselves, and that's what I was taught as a child. And it wasn't until I went out that I saw things that my soul cannot understand even now. Mm-hmm. And I think I am so blessed to live in the now, to live today, because so much positivity has happened, so much joy has come. South Africa was a land of plenty. There was always music. When I think of Africa, I inhale an aroma of wood smoke and, you know, bush, and, you know, it's a different earth, whereas in Australia it is more eucalyptus, it's more joy here, it's more open. But I didn't realise something was wrong until I was probably about in my early teens. And then I realised, oh, my goodness, I'm living in a society where not everybody is the same. And that was my mission then. I thought, I'm going to change it. I'm going to work towards making things change and helping everyone that I meet to find joy, to find peace, to find love in their heart for every person, because I think love is what we need. Love is the essence of life to me. And if you approach everything with love, you can see how it becomes better. And so, you know, I'm so delighted that now it's a Rainbow Nation. I love.
So living up in South Africa, you saw a lot of apartheid. You saw a lot of separation. Yes. You saw a lot of division. You saw a lot of pain and injustice. So you moved to Australia. Yes. I love you Australians. I really do. But I keep it 100, okay? There's a lot of that still going on there. I just saw a couple of public service announcements from the Aborigines people saying that their land is being grabbed, that they're being mistreated, that they're not acknowledged. They have an extra chromosome. They're some of the original people on the planet, brains on the planet, and they treat it like sloppy seconds. So it takes a lot. And you being a white woman, you've lived a certain charmed life because you have not had to physically be subjected to a lot of things that people haven't. So through your faith, you have found solace and you're working towards helping to create a more perfect union. And I commend you for that. But there's a lot of work to do. Yes. there's a lot of pain in the world that's not going to be erased because you read the same book that I read. We're both Christian women. And it tells us there exactly what's going to happen and exactly what's happening now. And it's pretty scary. It's a pretty daunting task that we're up against. So what do you do when you run across an adversarial position? Say you're somewhere and there's a conversation that's going on, or you see an injustice happening. What do you do? But you have to be careful now because you don't want a bullseye on your back either.
It is, but I do believe, like, as an Aussie, we're straightforward. We call people on and say, hey, you know, lift your game is an Australian saying. It means, hey, check what you're doing, like, you know.
I got to write this down. What you say? I love you guys, little idioms. Lift your game.
Okay. Do better. You know, you call people on it. I will say, hey.
I like how you say, good on you.
Yes.
Like, good for you. You say, good on you. So you're putting it on, or you're, you know. So, yeah, I get it. Or when you're old, you say a bit long in the tooth.
Well, yes. Yeah. So in Australia, I was really blessed. So when I first came to Australia, I had opportunity to go to Freegon, which is a Pitjantjatjara, which is an Aboriginal community. I was invited to spend 3 weeks there with the people. I brought some books. I brought some African artifacts. And that was in 1983. At that stage, we didn't have the internet. We wouldn't have been having this conversation. And I spent a lot of time with the elders because I had a deer skin drum and they wanted to know about other people of colour in other countries. They didn't know. And they were so proud. I went to Uluru with them. They blessed me with taking him into the elder ladies, taking me into the sacred sites that females could go and teaching me some very pertinent things that have guided my life. So I saw these ancient people, the oldest civilization on earth that's still going. So I saw these proud people, and that's imprinted in my heart forever.
And then, you know what is imprinted in their heart too is because they were welcoming to you and they invited you. See, people, you know, it's one thing when people impose themselves upon you, you know, it's another thing when you are invited and you're welcomed. So that was, you know, that was a great honor and a great privilege too. I know I'm invited a lot of times on Native American land here where my counterparts are not. And they don't understand, but it's a level of trust and respect, and they can see that sincerity in you.
Yeah, so I've had that, and then my husband and both my children have also had the opportunity to go back and spend some time in this community and make those connections that are so important. For me, one of the saddest part about the invasion of this country was that they took their children away. They took their children away. As a mother, I cannot imagine the anguish, the history of the impact on a soul of people. And I think we have so much to do. We have so much work to do. We have to speak up for our brothers and sisters that are voiceless. We have no choice that we are blessed to live in a free society where we've got freedom of speech and stuff. So we need to speak up for those that can't. That is our sacred duty. We need to say to our brothers and sisters, hey, this is wrong. What are you doing?
They did that here under the administration of our president number 45. I don't speak that name. I don't let filth ride on my tongue. But that individual separated children at the border from their.
No, family. They came and stole the children. Yeah. Yeah. There is a beautiful movie called The Rabbit Proof Fence. I really implore you to read it. It will resonate with your soul as the injustice. And here on site, I met a wonderful Aboriginal lady that made a connection for me between what the Romans did in Europe and what the British did with colonization. And it's just like they took a blueprint of those atrocities and decimation of cultures, and they blueprinted it on the rest of the world.
Sure. I mean, you know, but I look at it too, oddly enough, is that there are necessary evils in the world. If everything was hunky-dory and pleasant, you know, where would we be? I'm not one, I'm not a proponent of controversy or disruption or disrespect. But again, we all have to rise up.
Yes.
To whom much is given, much is required. And if these other ethnic groups, me included, were so barbaric as people say or claim that we were, trust me, we would have handled it a long time ago. That's not the intention. Our intention is to be peaceful. It's to be loving. It's to be kind. But it's a struggle every day. You know, we're crabs in a barrel. Not even take out the fact that minorities or ethnicity, I mean, women against women, gays against, you know, heterosexual, women against men, sexual abuse. So there's a lot of things that play into that. But you wrote a book. Now let me go to my other screen because I want to read the back of the book. It's called Daring to Reclaim My Bespoke Pathway, The Secret Reflections of Lived Experiences. And you ask the question, what did you dream of as a child? Are you living that dream? If not, do you feel enslaved in a seemingly automated cycle of self-denial and confusion? Wow. Gift yourself the opportunity to discover your truth and dare to reclaim your personal hope, dreams, and life purpose. As I reflect on the wisdom gained through my lived experiences, I hope that you may discover your bespoke pathway. Come on a journey, learn, love, laugh at, and accept yourself so that you can truly start living your dream. I'm a dreamer. I'm a dreamer. I dream enormous dreams. I mean, huge. I go out of the box, girl. I challenge myself and I ask myself often and regularly, does it get any better than this? And what else is possible? Tell us about your dreams and what you want people to find inside the pages of your book.
Okay, so my dream is that we could just look at every person who crossed our path with love. My mum's used to teach me that if someone triggers something negative in you, you need to sort of just step back for a moment and see, what is it about me that triggers? What have I got wrong? And actually sort of reflect on, what is it that triggers me when I see this or I hear this? Mm-hmm. And so with the book, what had happened is I'm writing another book.
Oh,
but
wow.
It's still in the pipeline. And so last year, COVID was gifted to us as a global phenomenon and pandemic. And we had planned to go to Ireland. We'd been saving for years to go to Ireland. We had it all booked, but COVID didn't. And I still had my 6 weeks annual leave that I had to take. And I was sort of thinking, what am I going to do? And I, being a woman of faith, I prayed about it. And I do dream a lot of instructions, I call them, from heaven.
Right.
And I was told, write this book. This book is based, it's a simple book. It's based on my lived experience. So I've got lots of short little chapters so that you can use this book, actually off the trail a bit, you can use it as like words of knowledge. If you've got a few moments, you can open it and just read a chapter. And the aim of this book is I'm offering you something that happened in my life. And I'm thinking, okay, so you read about this. What does my little story trigger in your soul? What is it that you think of when you read this? And then, you know, giving you that opportunity to sort of say, okay, well, my story was this, your story is totally different, but as a woman reading this, I am reminded of something in my life with this. And then I'm sort of, this is where the daring is, a daring you to sort of honor your truth, to come back to that which as a little child you wanted. So in my little book, I talk about, as a young child, my dad was a businessman, and being a child of faith and God, I'd see people, the Australian way is sucking up, I don't know what it is. The Australian words are sucking up. It means you ingratiating yourself with a child, you know, to get to meet the parents. And I'd see this, and people would say, "Are you ludicrous, little daughter? Oh, geez." Oh, you know, and I would see, and I, as a child, have the gift of seeing the insincerity of them. So I used to, even as a little toddler, I had chosen the surname Woods for myself. Stella Woods. And I used to write in my dad's books in his office, my new name. And I'd forgotten about this. So the day I was getting married, my dad came out and he was laughing. He said, "You know, today you're actually getting what he manifested, my child. Here, this is the surname. Today you'll be Mrs. Woods. This is the name you chose when you were four for yourself today."
Wow.
"As a 19-year-old woman getting married, that's it. You will do it." So, you know, interesting things that had happened. And I think, you know, as a little child, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be my own person. I wanted to be this woman that stood in my own truth, in my own power, that wasn't attached to someone's child, someone's daughter, someone's sister, right, someone's friend. Just be me. I just want you to see, look at me and see me, not anything else. And I think that's an inherent part of every person's soul. If you want
to, so that is what's really, that's what you're uncovering.
Yeah, so that's what I'm covering. You know, because so often, as particularly as women, we have been conditioned to put ourselves last. So we've got sort of little things like a real put down, and I'm not sure in America if it's the same, but is, "Oh, she loves herself." And that's seen as an insult.
And I was like, "Yes, darling, I do. And what else can I do to enhance that?" So many people live the imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Definitely. They are afraid to step into their own, or they are intimidated by what outside influences have to say.
Yeah. So that's what my book is for, April, just for a woman that is busy, that haven't got much time. So it's in a nice soft cover. You can put on your coffee table, in your handbag. If you've got 10, 15 minutes to spare, you can just read a little chapter and nourish your soul. Think of what's happened to me, and that will give you some food for thought to draw upon what that triggers in your life, something you can do to make your life better, to implement a strategy, like a simple thing, like a nighttime routine. Like so many mothers and so many women, so exhausted at the end of the day, they just flop in the bed and they sleep. Whereas just to do a little routine, you can get a special mug, a special cup, make yourself a nice drink, or do something that it signals your soul to end.
Say your prayers.
Yes, you can say your prayers.
Me and my mother used to do that before my mother passed away. Like little kids, we would get in the bed together and we'd say our prayers every night. And, you know, she passed away not too long ago. And I heard her say to me, I said, Mama, I haven't been saying my prayers at night. And she goes, "Well, you better, because I want to see you again." So now me and Mr. Magnificent incorporate saying our prayers together every night. But in that prayer, we put a little neuro-linguistic programming, a little hope and prayer for the next day.
Yes.
A sense of gratitude for the day before, and just for being able to be together in the moment. You use a word a lot, love. Love is different for everyone. It's, You know, some people want respect. Some people want praise. Some people want money. Some people want power. Some people want sex. You know, love, I think that's one of the biggest commandments, is that we have to love, because it is a daunting task. You can't just hand it out like cookies. Mm. It takes work. Do you believe in unconditional love? Because I don't.
Unconditional love, yes, within certain parameters. I think love encompasses so much. I think one of the best guideposts for me is, I don't know if you know, Gary Chapman's written the 5 love languages.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yes. So we know those 5 languages just explains how people perceive love and what they need. And that's basically what you said. And I think as a parent, you do love your child unconditionally. You can see their mistakes. You can see things you don't like. And your child, it's a special kind of love. When you have that first, I don't know how many children, if you have more than one,
we had the courage to do it one time, and I have a bonus time. But yes. It is, and that love is, you know, you love each person individually.
Yes. So that's what I was going to say. For my children, when I had my son, I couldn't think that there would be anything that could surpass that love that I felt for that child. And then my daughter came, and she was a child who I had to fight for her life. And the love I have for them, I think it's not unconditionally, it is complete love. And each person and each connection you have, it's an individual. It is just between those two souls, that love. And it feels different, and it is different. It can be whole and complete, but for each relationship, it is different.
Mm-hmm. And people know that, but you have to nurture it differently. You have to treat it. You have a level of responsibility, respect, and boundaries. Again, because all of that is different. Mm-hmm. Each love is not equal. I don't believe in unconditional love, because I'm going to tell you why, Estelle. You come at me too crazy. Hey, the conditions have changed. You know, you disrespect me. You dishonor me. You cheat me. You hit me. You hurt my child. Try to steal my man. All of that. My conditions have changed. So I guess I'm going to be one of the people that St. Peter pulls over and has a little chat with before I get through the pearly gates. Because, again, I establish boundaries. And that's not to say that I, you know, want anything bad to happen to you. No. But love is more precious than gold. I think you have to work at it, like trust. A lot of people say, oh, trust. Well, I don't give trust easily either, because it is a condition. I trust you if you do XYZ. If you don't do XYZ, I don't trust you. It's a bantering back and forth. You don't just give that. You have to work at it. And the levels of it are different. So I totally understand where you're coming from. Let me ask you some fun questions. Well, before I ask you the fun questions, I want you to share with my brains a little bit about your daughter. And, you know, you said that you had to fight for her life. You told me in the green room that you had to resuscitate her almost literally every day. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'll step back just a moment. I had 16 miscarriages before I had a live child. And it's part of my story. And I can remember sitting with a doctor and some nurses and a social worker that told me that it was medically impossible to have a child. And I said, you're wrong. I'm going to have a son that looks like me and a daughter with golden hair. And I said, you're setting yourself up for grief. And I said, no, God has shown me something. I have dreamt about my children since I was a child. Mm. And I knew that I was going to have them. But long story short, I had my son after a Christian rally. I went to a Christian rally and the man, the evangelist said, God wants to give you whatever you need. Mm-hmm. And whatever you want, if you come up, and he didn't ask me what I wanted. He said, you are here because you are.
Hey, I've had it happen
this
to me.
This is it. Yes.
I've had it happen to me. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. And he said, this is what you've come for. God said, yes, this and everything. Mm. And we had our son 9 months later. And
only do it, girl. God will do it. Yes, he will.
Yeah.
Yes, he will.
And so we had the son, and the doctors once more said, you know, with your history, there is no way you ever had another child. But I was in a very busy shopping precinct, and an Indian lady tapped me on the shoulder and said, I've just seen God throw a bucket of rainbows on you. And I thought, She said, it's a little girl with golden hair. And my son made this little noise. And I looked at him. When I looked back, she disappeared. I think, I can't be pregnant. I'm still breastfeeding. And I thought, I went to the chemist, bought 2 pregnancy tests in a packet, did that test, and I was pregnant. And I thought, well, I'll do the second one, I'm pregnant. Then I had this baby, and Selena was born 12 weeks and 3 days, they say 12 plus 3, early. So it was a mercy dash from, I live in a small country community in a country town, to the big city. And I had an ambulance officer say all the way with my legs up in the air saying, hour long trip, don't push. If you do, the baby will die. If you push, the baby will die. So I had this child, and I was in intensive care after her birth. She was in the NICU after her birth. And when down the track living this path, I eventually had to bring her home. And once more, I had this little medical team saying to me, this child's too sick, she cannot live. Do not set yourself up, she cannot live. You do not get attached to her. And I said, I was attached the moment I knew she was a possibility. And I came home, and she had a syndrome. She came out home on apnea monitors. I don't know if people are familiar. Yeah, it's like the heart monitors and stuff. And that would go off each time she virtually went to sleep. Her heart and lungs would just switch off. And I'd get that alarm would sound in my head, and I'd have to do CPR to bring her back. And I cannot tell you how difficult this was. I didn't sleep for 4 years. She's now 24 and there's nothing wrong with her. It took its toll. I can remember one night I couldn't get back and I screamed at God. I got cross. I said, how dare you give me this child to take her from me? I cannot do it. And I hit her, just this force on her chest. And suddenly she pinked up with the most beautiful smile on earth. Mm. And this is my life. At this time, I was an elder in a church, and people would call on, while I was living this, they would call on me daily with their problems. And I would think in my soul, I'd help them. And I'd think, I wonder if you knew my life, if you knew what a problem is. Mm. But, you know, these are the things.
But to whom much is given, much is required.
Yes. So I was a nurse. I could do the CPR. I could do the gavage feeding. I could do the resuscitation. But it took a toll on me. I gained a lot of weight. But I didn't sleep for 4 years. I was just awake all the time, just waiting for her, for that alarm.
Did you have the support of a spouse or family members?
Because I'm a migrant, I have no family here. My husband had to work, so I would rest in the evenings. In the evenings when he came home from work, and he would look after her, and I would maybe rest just on the sofa for an hour or two before he went to bed, and that was my life. I when she was a bit more stable, when she was two, I used to pay for childcare on a Wednesday for 4.5 hours. And I used to take her there because I could not trust, and you say that trust, I could not trust another person to ensure my child. You know, that mother instinct is something, it's so overwhelming. It's so strong that you think, what well, if they thought she was sleeping? And well, we went back and she was cold. That,
you had 16 losses. Let me ask you, do you mind me asking you a couple questions about that? As a woman, you know, 1 in 4, I believe, women, pregnancy end in miscarriage. 16 times, how did you still enjoy intimacy? I know that you love your partner, but you look at yourself and you go, and I'm assuming, what's wrong with me? Am I defective? Why can't I carry a child? Why is this? And then when your partner comes near you and you want to be intimate with them, you know, how do you free yourself from this almost paranoia that could set in?
For me, my faith. So it all started. We'd been married exactly 12 months and I had ectopic pregnancy that almost took my life. And during that, God showed me my children. I will tell you, I have dreamt of my children all through my life. Of them, and when I look at them now, they are the kids I dreamt of, and I knew I was going to have these children. And I think my faith was my family and my support, that I knew, you know, it says, I live the fact that it says, where two or three are gathered in my name, for whatsoever you ask, it will be done. We had asked for these two children. I knew we were getting, I knew they were coming, but it wasn't easy. I didn't share this with many people. I can remember after ectopic pregnancy, and I talk about in my book, someone coming and saying to me, oh, I'm so glad this happened. Now when your marriage fails, at least you won't be stuck with a child overseas.
See, and then you want me to love that condition unconditionally. Girl, I'll be... You better than me, I'm going to scratch their eyes out.
I was in too much shock to do anything. I couldn't believe that someone could be so brutal and so inconsiderate and so lacking in kindness. So I had to. It is a hard journey to forgive that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I have.
What do you say to a woman that's in a situation to where she has lost, you know, a child and she feels less than, not equal to? How do you tell her to follow her bespoke pathway?
You know, as women, I think sometimes just the hug, just holding her soul close to you and, you know, having that understanding, because we have been subjugated as females to the point that we're not allowed to grieve our losses like this. I can remember after one miscarriage, one of the doctors waited 6 weeks, had my OBGYN examination, and the doctor said, oh, you're fine, go home and go at it, hammer and tongs. I didn't even know what hammer and tongs meant.
No, what is that?
Which is a very crude way of going and have intimacy, have intercourse with your husband. And I thought,
wait, what do they call it again?
Have to write hammer and tongs.
Hammer and tongs. Well, I'm scared of that. So I guess that's referencing to put the squeeze on it.
Yes. So it was just like, how could you say that to me? And I mean, I have lived this path. I can share, I can listen. I think people just want to be heard and listened. And I say, I too have walked this path. And I know that, you know, until very recently, people didn't speak about the losses. And you know, it is 1 in 4 women experience this life. And my daughter has, since she was little, said, Mummy, I'm never going to have my own children. I'm going to adopt children. I'm going to get children. There's children that are just want love. So they will be, what do you think you will do? Wow. If Adna said, the moment I hold my grandbaby in my arms, I don't care where they come from, they will be mine.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, it is just, I have been to some sacred ceremonies. I think it is providing that support with other women that have been through that, to speak to that woman's truth, to hold her, because it is such a profound grief to lose a child, and yet society does not want us to speak our truth in that.
Well, so you know,
the listening.
You have to, and thank you. Do you have a copy of your book there with you?
I do.
Let's see it. All right. I want your face right to the side of it. I want people to, that's right. I want people to be able to see all of that when they go and purchase it. It is available on Amazon, correct?
Yes, it's available on Amazon in soft cover and in the Kindle version.
Oh, I'd love to hear it in an audio version. You have such a beautiful speaking voice. People can listen to that as they drive, as they meditate, as they think. It is absolutely wonderful. We're going to encourage that people get a copy of Daring to Reclaim My Bespoke Path. Let me ask you two more questions before we conclude, Estelle. What brings you the greatest joy? I don't want to hear about the kids. I don't want to hear about the husband. I want to hear about internally what pleases you and makes you happy.
I have dedicated my life to be of service. I have had the privilege to be at the first and last moment of birth and life. And I think for me, just seeing the light in people, just seeing, you know, how, oh, just thinking, the laughter of children, you know, something that brings me the greatest joy. Have you heard in a crowd a little toddler's belly laugh?
Mm-hmm.
That brings me the joy, because there's nothing, it is contagious. It just snowballs. We all, in the deepest part of our souls, that resonates. So I think, yeah, just to hear the joy and laughter in someone else, to see the veil of sadness or pain in someone's eyes lift and see that spark of joy reflected back at me. That, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want, it heals a part of me to see that light return to someone's life. So that's why my book, Bespoke Pathway, because God has preordained this blueprint of your life. It's individual, it's tailor-made. Nobody else has that bespoke pathway. It's yours.
That's right.
Nobody could limit it. So for me, that is seeing that joy and light in another person's soul reflected when I look at them.
Oh, wow. What do you want your legacy to be?
My legacy would be that every person that I have crossed in this life, that my path have crossed with, that they might think of me and think of something joyful, something healer, something laughter, something joyful that in their life. So I want to be leave a legacy of people reclaiming that in their life that this soul yearns for. That would be my legacy, that people will look for joy, to find that love for themselves. Because I think if I can gift you the idea that to love yourself is the greatest of all things, you know, you have to love yourself, all your lumps and bumps and the good and the bad which makes you up. If you can love that and you can accept yourself, then you can extrapolate it out to others. You cannot do that without. And so my legacy would be to sort of just ignite that spark of light and love in each person for themselves.
Wow. Well, that's what we do here on the edge every day, all day. Okay. We invoke, support, and encourage love. Mm. Whether it's conditional or unconditional, it's still love. Mm. You want to be involved in people's lives. You want to color in the white space. You have to love yourself first, and you have to follow a path. A path that has been pre-designed for you, brains. We always say it, from the womb to the tomb. You know, it's already laid out. You are just the observer of this life. You are the character actor. So how are you going to show up? Are you going to show up in purpose? Or are you going to act a fool? Are you going to disrespect people because you don't understand them? Or are you going to be bold enough to step outside of yourself and immerse yourself in someone else's pain, culture, distress? Are you going to nurture them? Are you going to resuscitate them? Are you going to push on their heart? That's what we want to know here on the edge. And Estelle, you've done a fabulous job explaining that and coloring in all the white spaces. And I thank you and I honor you for your courage, for your wisdom, and to be able to share your truth with people. There's a lot of women, like you said, that won't talk about that. They won't talk about one. They won't talk about two. But 16, you know, and again, they were not in vain. You will all be together again. And girl, with 16 kids, you're going to be busy.
Oh, and all the others.
All the others too, because you know what? God makes no mistakes. He knows exactly what he's doing. You know, we don't understand, and it will be revealed, but we have to open our hearts and be able to receive that. It's a big responsibility. So thank you again for being here on the edge with me and my brains. Please tell them how to contact you and also how to get a copy of your book.
Okay, so April, thank you. I feel really honored and blessed to have had this opportunity to speak with you and share little simple parts of my journey through life. So my book is available on Amazon and all good book sites online. I'll put it up there. Yeah. And you just put in either my name, Estelle Woods, or Daring to Reclaim My Bespoke Pathway. I know it's a bit of a long title, but go in Amazon, type it in. I've got very simple, very basic websites and things for you to look at. And I think there's audio, get it on Kindle, gift yourself opportunity to read my book, pop it in your bag. If you've got a few moments to spare, just on your coffee table, and use it like words of knowledge or oracle, if you want to call it. Just open a bit and see what it inspires. And I'd love to hear what you think and what your take is on my life experience.
And how apply to you, brains. We want you to do that. We want you to leave a comment, because she's writing her second book. And maybe what she did not include in the first that was relevant to you, or you know, questions that you have, you can contribute, and you will be a contributor to her next great book. Thank you so much, Estelle Woods. Please come back when you have the second book or when you have something else magical to share with my brains here on the edge. Would you?
Yes, definitely. Thank you, April. I would be honored to come back. Thank you so much for today. It's been very special.
Thank you. Be very special, brains. Run and out and get a copy of the book, because you know what? You've got a sister friend that's been there, done that, and wearing the t-shirt. And to be able to read something that is supportive and encouraging along her path would be great. So this is a great sister friend gift. Anytime. Doesn't have to be holiday time. Doesn't have to be your birthday. It could just be an everyday kind of love thing. Thank you so much. You're a love.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, brains.
Bye.